connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for web.
Computer today.
Computer.
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 NetSurfer Pro.
You're listening to Death of a Podcast. Today on Death of a Podcast, we're talking about a podcast made by two people from the Midwest called NetSurfer Pro, which ran for about a year-ish, give and change, until they decided to cover the works of the Lonely Island trilogy and found that their own island was sinking.
What's up? I'm the co-host, Galen, and with me, as always, is Matt.
Yeah, our island is not sinking, but it sure feels like that because it's been a very turbulent summer.
Yeah, indeed, it has been. We've been building this island for a while now, it's a great island.
Right. By the way, do you have any more iron? I'm running out of iron, and I need to make a new pickaxe. Gamer joke.
Speaking of gamer jokes were the first sign that their island was dying.
Speaking of gamer jokes, I do just want to take a brief moment, which will be 20 minutes as per usual, to talk about something that's cool that is not the subject of our episode, which is that I have been playing Neo The World Ends With You, aka 2WiiWii, aka The World Ends With Two, two spelled T-U in that case. That's a fun one. Anyways, it's the sequel to one of my favorite games of all time, probably my favorite. And so far, I'm on week 2, day 4, which probably doesn't mean anything unless you've played either of the games before, but it's, I don't know. I don't know how long I am in the game. Maybe there's more than 2 weeks, but, more than a fortnight. But, so, it's a fun game. It's kind of the ideal sequel. Like, I haven't found anything that I disliked yet. It's really fun. Characters are great. Writing's great. There's two things I want to highlight, though. One of them is that I think it uses modern slang really well. Like, they say the words like sus or, what was the other one? There's another word like that they used, but, oh, and they also, there was a part where a character was mocking another character, and they did the alternating caps, no caps, kind of like the mocking SpongeBob meme. And I thought that was really clever as far as like a localization or, writing, what have you. I feel like it's very easy for writers to write like modern slang in a very poor or overused way, but they use it pretty sparingly as well, which feels pretty nice. Just like, a nice little seasoning. The other thing is that this is something that the first game did that I love, which is all of the enemies are named after genres of music. And specifically, in like typical RPG fashion, you encounter like more powerful versions of the same enemies over the course of the game. And when you do so, their names kind of progress like the music genre would. So for example, there's like a crab enemy in the first game that is named after like ska. So it's the ska crab. And then the later, more powerful version is the reggae crab. Because reggae came after ska, of course.
It would be like pop, then pop punk, then...
Or it would be
punk,
more...
then pop punk.
Yeah, it would be more like punk, then emo, what have you. And oftentimes this is actually related to the animal it is, because they're all based off animals. So, like, the crab I mentioned has, like, that sort of Caribbean coastal sort of sound to it. But another example would be like the grizzlies, which are named after mosh pits. There's mosh grizzly, circle grizzly, and wall of death grizzly. And so it's like the grizzlies are very forceful and big and tanky, kind of like that. Or all of the frogs have like American South sort of genres, like Dixie frog, big band frog, and then blues frog or bluegrass frog, something like that.
So bluegrass seems like it would be a natural progression.
Yeah, and then I think the last one's just jazz frog. So it's very cool the way they incorporate the music genres into the animal names.
Thus far, do we have any like modern-ish genres referenced?
I've been keeping an eye out. There is a new animal type, a new enemy type that has distortion in the name. I haven't like gotten through the entire game. I'm mainly keeping an eye out to see if we have like a synthwave, chillwave, vaporwave progression.
Yeah.
Because that would be the most, I think, modern I could think of.
Yeah.
Unless we have like a hyperpop.
Yeah, I was about to say a fucking noise, a noise lemur.
See, it's funny because the enemies are called noise.
Ah.
So a lemur would be a noise lemur just anyways. All right, that's it. Neo Tweewee is great. I streamed the first few chapters of it. I won't be streaming the rest of it, but if you want like a sample of that, check out my stream.
The decision to stop streaming the rest of it was the first downfall of the podcast. Yeah, I don't really know why. I guess that, you know, Matt just wanted to, you know, enjoy the game on their own time. But like, you know, that publicity, especially during the Neo Tweewee Renaissance that occurred immediately after, would have really, you know, probably helped the podcast. But, you know, it just didn't. And then it died.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't have stopped streaming it, but to be fair, it was a very good game, and it was 2 in the morning when I was done playing for the day. Alright, so...
speaking of, music...
I guess, yeah. We are, no longer... Well, actually, technically, we're in the final days of Lonely Jellyland. I think we're still going to go through our planned series of episodes, which will then end in Lonely Jellaugust. I don't think we ended up with a portmanteau for that, but... So we talked about the Lonely Island's music career kind of as a whole, as well as their early TV career with Saturday Night Live and the digital shorts. We talked about their first feature-length movie, Hot Rod, which was a sort of rewrite of a script originally meant for Will Ferrell. And now we're going to talk about the movie after Hot Rod. And this is a movie that came out in 2016, so like way after Hot Rod. That was, I want to say, 2008?
I think it was 2007. It was 9 years until they got a second chance.
Right. And it's interesting because, so, Hot Rod was pretty much just a, I don't know, a normal comedy in a way. But this is not only a movie, but it also, its soundtrack is, like, pretty crucial to the movie.
Yeah.
Because the soundtrack...
It's a concept album film, in a sense.
Yes, it is also a mockumentary, of course. So we're talking about pop star Never Stop Not Stopping.
The Fact Corner.
Which was released in 2016 and directed by Jorma and Akiva. Autocorrected it to Jordan. I apologize to Jorma. And to
Michael Jordan, who... Yes. The autocorrect thought was the director.
We're not talking about that movie that just came out.
Oh, but yes, anyway.
It once again was a flop at the box office. It, like, I think it grossed $9 million of its $20 million estimate of US dollars. So, yeah, kind of a flop. But it was better reviewed than Hot Rod and still has a cult following, of course. I want to mention this, though. So, of course, the soundtrack was number one on the U.S. Billboard charts at Comedy Album, but on the U.S. Billboard Top 200, it peaked at 69th.
Yes! That is the best possible outcome.
Yes, that's essentially topping at number one for them. I thought that was the most incredible detail. And yeah, so the movie follows a character named Connor For Real, played by Andy Samberg, who is a sort of pop star, if you will. He originally started in a trio called the Style Boys, with Owen, played by Jorma, and Lawrence, played by Akiva. And they broke up after differences between Connor and Lawrence. Since then, it follows sort of Connor's solo career. More or less a duo career because he still works with Owen. Yeah, and it kind of goes from there. It follows Connor's, like, rise, downfall, and then return. It is a mockumentary style, so it mixes real-life musicians alongside, like, more acted and scripted moments to make it look like a real documentary about a musician. But obviously, everything is really... turned up to 11, if you will. That's a mockumentary joke.
Yeah, this, I think a crucial piece of information, at least for the title, is that the 2011 documentary about Justin Bieber, Never Say Never, released 5 years earlier at 2011, which was, you know, So, having never seen it, cannot say if it is similar in format, but clearly it is similar in theme, in that, you know, following the hottest new pop star rise to fame, their past from humble beginnings and whatnot.
Yeah, an important point to that regard is that the beginning of the Style Boys is a lot like Justin Bieber's beginning, and also a lot like the Lonely Island's beginning, where they were kind of discovered via the internet.
Yeah. I mean, let's get into it, basically. So, yeah, to give a very brief plot summary, Connor for Real, he's, you know, the biggest number one top star, really famous for his songs, really famous for his personality, really famous for, engaging with his fans a lot, to the extent that, like, he, you know, posts vlogs that are like, just got my butt waxed, just jacked it and feeling really mellow. But he gets really big, and his first album, massive success. And he is currently making his second album, but his second album tanks real bad. He wrote all the songs himself. He had over 100 producers, but it just bombs. And he does still keep touring, and the tours do really well, but the tours don't sell out. And so his manager and publicist decide to get him, like, an opener, which is
Hunter the Hungry, yes. Who is, like, an up-and-coming hip-hop artist with a lot of energy behind him.
And so they begin touring together with Hunter opening for Connor. And Hunter is a big smash hit. Immediately helps everything, you know, sell out. And, like, you know, eight tour stops in advance sold out. But Hunter basically becomes the focus. Hunter, like, goes gold, but even while Connor's album is still struggling and stuff like that, and Connor gets more and more desperate, to the extent that he, like, keeps doing stage gimmicks, and eventually Connor quits. Basically, he fires his manager, but in effect he quits, because his manager is now Hunter's manager, and so he, you know, has a big crash. And A small detail that is important that I didn't mention is that in between this, Connor's friend, Dave?
Owen.
I'm probably thinking of an entirely different character. Connor's friend and DJ, Owen, is basically trying to get the band back together, get Owen, Connor, and Lawrence back together as the Style Boys. And during this depressive spiral, after a, you know, revelation come to Jesus sort of moment, Connor and Owen go out to Lawrence's farm, and Connor eventually apologizes for the big thing, which was that he had this one guest verse that was written by Owen that he took all credit for. And so they get back together to perform the big song, and they, you know, go on stage at the Poppies.
Yeah.
They show up as the Style Boys and rock the house, and everything is great. And the mockumentary ends with a very cheerful note. And then Connor gets mauled by a wolf.
Yes. So, specifically sort of the subplot with Owen, or the plot with Owen, because it's sort of the main plot, is that Connor used Owen's beats for the first album. He was, like, the only producer. And then he completely, like, didn't use any of Owen's stuff for the second album. Owen was supposed to be, like, the DJ, but he only played songs off an iPod. And so he was just pretending to DJ. And throughout the tour, Owen started getting kind of brushed aside. Like, they put this giant metal helmet on him. They were related to, like, Daft Punk or Deadmau5. And Owen, like, can't see, it hurts his neck, and he just gets kind of brushed aside by Connor. And so it's sort of Owen's perspective is that Connor could be helped if he just learned to work together with him. And then also he wants them to like make things up so they could get back together because that was actually helpful. Whereas like Connor's ego is steadily inflating.
Yeah.
And the guest verse that Lawrence wrote that Connor did or performed and took the credit for was also notable because it was Connor's like big solo break. It's what got him more famous than the rest of the Style Boys. And so it was sort of like the breaking point for a lot of reasons. And yeah. That's where a lot of the animosity comes from. I want
to explain the joke really quickly as well, because it is one of the best jokes. The verse that he did was the catchphrase verse, where according to the way he tells it, which isn't true, but he wanted to have a catchphrase, but he kept thinking, but like there were just too many. So like the entire verse is just a bunch of different fucking catchphrases.
Yeah.
It's just rapid fires.
It caught me completely off guard the first time I saw it. Just how much happens.
I also love that, like, the hashtag from the very beginning is doink to doink, and that's, like, you know, the third thing he says.
Yeah.
The third catchphrase in the verse.
Yeah. It's great. So, throughout the entire movie, of course, the actors are kind of, like, playing characters, but they have a ton of musicians play themselves, talking about like Connor and the Style Boys. So they have like Arcade Fire, Nas, DJ Khaled, Questlove, of course, who's also kind of a comedian. But then they also have like Danger Mouse was a ridiculous pull. Just like a really wide range of people, specifically from pop and hip hop. And it's just really funny hearing like A$AP Rocky talking about the catchphrase verse and how genius it was.
Yeah.
All the musicians do a really good job at putting on a straight face when they're talking about it, just like making it out to be an actual thing. And I think that's part of the mockumentary strength is that like it really mixes it's sort of like how alternate reality games will like mix in real life elements to be like, "Ooh, it's not a game, it's real." The pop star is like, "It's not a comedy show, it's a real musical talent." A real musical documentary. Ooh. There's also like references to the camera crew, which is neat. There's a bit where Hunter the Hungry is having his own documentary made and he gets his camera mixed up for Connor's cameras. And then he gets his cameras mixed up for Snoop Dogg's cameras. And also there's a part where like Lawrence sees the Poppy Award placed on his shelf and he looks at the camera and says, "Did one of you put this here?" Sort of like a neat little, sort of in-universe recognition that there is a doc crew. The joke with Lawrence is really great.
So spoilers, I guess. It is a joke spoiler, but like it is one of the best. It is like the slowest building joke that is just greatest payoff.
Yeah. So throughout the movie, you know, they interview Lawrence on the farm. And he mainly carves wood, and he does, like, really kind of basic wood carvings. You know, they're not super detailed, they're just kind of blocky, kind of low poly, if you will. You know, he has, like, one of a poppy, and he's like, "Here's the poppy I would have gotten if Connor credited me on the song. So it's the one that I should have gotten, because I was the one who wrote it." And, you know, there's, like, him making, like, a duck and stuff like that, a mask. The only other time you see him doing farm work is with, like, these two baby goats. And he has this long beard, so it looks like he's some sort of, like, mountain ascetic in Colorado. You know, like, living just off the land, not really hooked into entertainment or anything. Or yeah. Society. And then, when they finally go to make things up with Lawrence, he's like, "You guys still smoke weed?" And they're like, "Yeah." And then he brings them over like a hill and it reveals this huge sprawling marijuana farm. And so he has this huge production going on of just weed, which, of course, is legal in Colorado. And like that was one of the few states that allowed it at the time of the movie. So him being in Colorado was relevant. And then also he opens like a barn and it's this giant recording studio.
I love that they don't explain at all that recording studio.
Yeah, he just still had a recording studio with him.
I love during that, like, montage when they're all getting high, he's, like, you know, labeling out the weed, and it's all got, you know, different stupid names. It's like, you know, squirrel dick, whatever. And then, like, he the middle one is frog jizz, but, like, it isn't weed. It's just sort of like, it's a smaller jar that has what looks like a very viscous liquid in it. And so it's like, hang on.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of, like, very quick jokes like that. I was really surprised. There's a scene where Maya Rudolph says the N-word.
Yeah! So, okay, good segue. Good segue, actually. Here is, my big hot take of this episode. I think that, Hot Rod aged better than Popstar.
Interesting.
So, here's the thing. Popstar was released in 2016, and obviously it is a mockumentary, it is a parody, it is a satire, but it is definitely a, like, pre-Trump era satire parody sort of thing, and here's why I say that. Here's why. There are multiple jokes that are very clearly, like, rich pop stars and, you know, the uber rich, the uber famous, they are extremely out of touch and are easily will do something incredibly insensitive to basically just make money. And, you know, this is a running through line, like, when he like does a show in Spain, he pronounces all of his S's as the. Because according to him, like, people in Spain sound like they say the instead of se. And so, like, you know, he's doing this entire song that's like, you know, fiesta, ta, ta, and stuff like that. Or, like, one of Hunter Harry's song, fucking Hunter the Hungry songs, he's, like, just in, like, Native American headdress during one of them for, like, just no real reason. And the reason I say this is outdated, the reason, like, I am still laughing, but here's the problem. I understand that the joke is that these people are out of touch and do not actually understand anything about, like, the what we would now know as woke culture that they are trying to voice their opinions on. But there's a really easy line to, like, miss, which is that to somebody who thinks, let's say, that Spanish people sound funny, it is very easy to, like, interpret that joke just as, haha, Spanish people sound funny, even if the person who is doing it is clearly the rube, the idiot. It's like, there's this line that, like, a lot of media tries to toe that, like, it gets misinterpreted. And that's why I think that it hasn't aged as well as Hot Rod. Like, Hot Rod has some off-color moments, but, like, when the off-color moments happen, I feel like the joke is a lot more clear.
Right. I think Connor is meant to be a character you dislike and view as being, in, like, really insensitive. And there are some songs that work better with this, I think, than others.
I think the very first song is still a banger,
well,
as far as parody goes.
As far as, like, the more political stuff, I think Equal Rights is actually pretty good with this. Because, hear me out. So Equal Rights, the song, is him saying, like, you know, everybody should have rights. You know, gay rights, trans rights, all those rights, non-binary rights. But then he keeps interjecting the words like not gay or I'm not gay. And I think that's ages okay because it is very like end of June, end of Pride Month, or just like corporate Pride Month. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. In the same way that corporations say like, oh, we support gay rights, also buy our products, and also we'll remove any mention of you know, LGBTQ stuff at the end of June. Like, in that same way, it is like a rich person trying to be an ally without realizing that they're not being an ally. That's what that feels like, and I think that works well. But more so, I do think the songs that work well are the ones that don't really punch anywhere, that just make Connor look stupid. Like you said, the first one, I'm So Humble, which...
Oh, God, yeah. I forgot about that one.
The only person that punches is Adam Levine.
I forgot that I'm So Humble was first. When I said the first one, I thought that was Equal Rights, because that's the first music video.
Oh, yeah.
But yes, I'm So Humble is also extremely good, and like it does a really good job at setting the scene. I also think it's a really fucking good parody.
Yeah. Like,
it is extremely overt while also not saying its overt message, except also saying its overt message.
Yeah, I do love how, like, they have holograms of them. They have, like, a hologram of Adam Levine singing, and then they have a hologram of Connor, and then they're just getting more and more holograms, and then, like, the holograms of Adam Levine start grinding.
Yeah.
It's like, it really just sells who Connor is as a character from the start. There's also, Freaky Girl or something? The Bin Laden song?
Yeah.
Which reminds me a lot of Drop the Bomb from The Simpsons, the Yvonne Etniage song. I feel like if you're gonna do, like, pop music mockumentaries, it almost feels like you have to do, like, a pro-military propaganda song.
Hey, would you like to take a quick diversion to the Fact Corner for a second?
Okay.
The Fact Corner.
So, fun fact about the killing of Bin Laden. The person who killed him, Rob O'Neill, is a, how shall I say, contentious figure within the military. Not just outside, because he's also, like, you know, a very, like, you know, oh, my generation was hard, we killed Bin Laden, these generations so soft. But, like, within the military, he is a very controversial figure, because when he killed, well... When SEAL Team 6 killed Bin Laden, they were given explicit instructions to not fuck with the face. Do not mess up the face, because, like, we want to be able to directly identify him. And what he did is he canoed Bin Laden. Now you might be asking, what is canoeing? That's where you shoot a bullet basically perpendicular to the forehead, so it, like, makes a V. It's a glory thing. It's fucked up, but he fucking canoed Bin Laden before they could get that that recognition, so that he could be the person to say that he canoed Bin Laden. So yeah, that's just an interesting fact that has nothing to do with this movie. I just thought it would be interesting to share. Fuck him.
Yeah.
All right, we can get out of the fact corner.
Yeah. The other song that I think works really well at making him look stupid, Connor for real, of course, is the Mona Lisa song, which I unironically love.
Yeah.
It has a few layers of, like, humor to it. So the obvious one is that he doesn't get the Mona Lisa or the pyramids of Giza, and so he's stupid. But it kind of says something about how, like, some art that's considered classic isn't really explained why it's considered classic, or, like, it's not approachable to sort of the masses. You know, it's kind of a sort of snobby art world sort of status. Kind of like how most people don't understand what it means when you say Citizen Kane is the best movie of all time. They might think it's, like, better than Star Wars, but they don't know that what makes it good doesn't actually relate to what they'll enjoy. Also, something interesting, he mentions that Mona Lisa looks like a man, which is sort of a transphobic language, but it is actually founded on a theory that some art historians have, that Da Vinci used his own face for a model during painting. So I think that's neat. I don't know if that's actually ever been really confirmed, but I do think it's funny that it kind of maybe indirectly references that theory.
It was confirmed in the History Channel series Fate Stay Night that Da Vinci was actually a woman. So
it could have been that, too. It could have been Fate Stay Night during the Holy Grail Wars. Yeah, sorry. I just pulled Connor for real from my gotcha pulls. He's kind of a garbage unit. I wanted Mordred. So
long as it's not Astolfo.
No, that's what you think. So... Something I do like is that there are a lot of, like, specific moments that parody specific pop star incidents. The one that was in the trailers for the movie was the Anne Frank house incident, where his publicist Paula, played by Sarah Silverman, is like, "Did you take a shit in the Anne Frank house?" And Connor's like, "Yeah, I did." Which I'm pretty sure is a parody of when Justin Bieber wrote in the Anne Frank, like, guest book that Anne Frank would have been a Belieber. I feel like it's too specific of a location. There's also, so a big thing is that there is an appliance company sponsoring his tour called Aquaspin. And the scene where Maya Rudolph does the thing, she's showing that they are sending out an update to all the fridges connected to the internet, as well as washers and dryers and dishwashers and stuff, where it'll play a Connor for Real song when it opens. And then, like, it happens. People get really upset, not only just because it causes a major power outage among the US, but also because they didn't want the song, like, foisted upon them. And that reminds me a lot of the U2 controversy, when U2's album was released to everybody on Apple Music, but it was automatically added to their library, which meant if you auto-downloaded out, like, songs from your Apple library to your phone or whatever, then it would auto-download this U2 album, and it couldn't be removed from your library, which meant that, like, people just ended up with U2 songs in their like, library. And so if they were playing, like, music on shuffle, it would sometimes just hit a U2 song nobody wanted to listen to. And so it really reminded me of that, where, like, the music was just foisted upon everybody as a promotion, but nobody liked it.
Man, there's that. I forgot about so many of these.
There's also this is sort of just like, I don't know if this is what it's actually referencing, but the costume switch gimmick going on reminds me a lot of, like, some of the stuff Peter Gabriel did, especially during the Lamb Lies Down on Broadway tour, where he had, like, a different costume for every song. The last thing is that, of course, they compare Owen's helmet to, like, Daft Punk and Deadmau5 and other DJs with stuff like that. I guess Marshmello's the main one that remains now. But I do want to mention that they mention a bunch of DJs with Star Wars droid names, like C3DJ, R2D2J, stuff like that. I think those are specifically references to RJD2, which does sample-heavy music, kind of like the Avalanches.
I do want to also highlight one of the ones that isn't Star Wars related, which is Oprah Spinfrey.
Oh yeah, Oprah Spinfrey is good. Reminds me a lot of, like, Com Trues or stuff like that. They have good fake names for sure. The Style Boys are kind of like the Beastie Boys in some ways.
ASAP Rocky has a, like, Lunchables-like deal called, like, ASAP Crunchies.
Yeah. There's a lot of good, like, fake products and stuff like that as well.
Yeah. I mean, the Poppies themselves are, like, you know, just the conglomeration of the Every E's, Grammys, and whatnot.
Something really funny, by the way, speaking of, like, the other musical celebrities. So, Lonely Island, you know, they've collaborated with a lot of celebrities and actors and stuff before, and a lot of them make appearances. Like, Bill Hader, briefly appears as the like, tour's guitar tuner, even though they never play a guitar, and they, like, make a point that they don't play any instruments during the tour. They just have a guy who tunes guitars for them. But also, something I love is that Justin Timberlake, the pop star, does not appear as himself in this movie. There is a brief showing of, like, Justin Bieber. There's obviously Adam Levine as himself, but not Justin Timberlake. Justin Timberlake plays a chef who cuts carrots for Connor. And part of Connor's growth as a person is represented by, like, there's a scene where his chef is singing along to one of Connor's songs, and Connor's like, "Hey, shut up, man. Leave the singing to the experts." And then when they do the big song at the end to show that he's grown, the chef comes in a fish costume and sings a little bit.
I also want to highlight that during that scene as well, I think it's Jason Derulo. I think it's Jason Derulo, because he also does a lot of dancing. he, like, earlier in the film, he, you know, in the mockumentary style, expresses, like, man, I love the Style Boys. It was always my dream to do the donkey punch on stage with them. And in the very end, when they're all back together, he comes out and dances, and then all of them do their big most famous dance together.
Right.
And like, as he's running off stage, he's the one that's giddy, that's like, I just got to dance with the Style Boys on stage.
Right. I do want to mention, like, that last song I think is a really good, like, wrap up of the movie, ties up a lot of loose ends and a lot of themes. So obviously it's the return of the Style Boys, the trio are together. It was written by it was based off ideas written by Lawrence, and so he gets writing credit again. I mentioned the chef gets to sing, but also their manager, Harry Duggins, I think, played by Tim Meadows, mentions that he was a member of Tony, but they split up because he wanted a question mark instead of an exclamation point at the end of his name, and he misses being... Or he laments that he missed his chance at being a star. And so during that final song, he comes on and does a saxophone solo. And it's really nice.
I also really like the very end as well, when they're walking off stage. Because, like, you know, Connor's sort of doing the narration over it. And then, like, you know, the random, like, stage manager just kisses Lawrence. And he's like, holy shit, do they even know each other? And why is Deborah here? And, like, it feels like a great lampshade. Like, they do the unironic sort of, you know, everyone is here moment, where everyone gets their time in the limelight. And then they have the kind of lampshade of that where, like, you know, then suddenly even more people are here. And it's like, wait, what? Why?
And it's also the thing where, like, it makes it seem like it's going to be just like a flashback narration, and then he narrates in real time as if it's his thoughts.
Yeah.
Also, of course, Michael Bolton plays during that final song. Gotta include Lonely Island co-collaborator Michael Bolton.
Yeah. that got an audible, like, an audible fucking oh shit out of me. When I was watching for the first time.
Yeah. Something kind of funny, by the way, a brief bit of foreshadowing I really like that I didn't notice the first time around. So, it's kind of like portrayed as a, you know, who's really in the right, you know, two takes, nobody knows who's telling the truth, who's lying, as far as who actually wrote the catchphrase verse. But it also mentions for a brief moment that Lawrence tried to do a solo career, and the song he sings in this regard is Things in My Jeep. And it's interesting because the three songs Lawrence wrote canonically are all lists of things. So there's Catchphrase Verse, which is just a list of catchphrases, Things in My Jeep, which is a list of things in his Jeep, and then Incredible Thoughts, which is a list of his incredible thoughts he wrote down. And all of Connor's songs are a bit more, like, tied to one concept, or, like, tells a story. They're not as much about listing things. So if you pay attention, you might notice early on that, like, none of Connor's other music is like the catchphrase verse, but Lawrence's song is like the catchphrase verse. Owen has this really neat little dubstep emo song.
Yeah. I feel like the general tone, another great joke is that when he talks about his career and then they play Things in My Jeep, one of the guest speakers is like, I didn't really relate to Things in My Jeep, you know, like, I have different things in my Jeep, so, it speaks to a kind of, you know, parody of youth culture, the sort of, like, it honestly feels like parody of Gen X culture, the sort of, like, you know, it's not just that it's vapid, it's also that, like, everyone is extremely stupid.
Yeah, it's everyone's, well, okay, I don't think everyone's extremely stupid. I think it's that, like, everyone treats the stupid things as serious, but then also there are the serious characters.
Yeah.
Like, Paula and Harry are, they're comedic characters, but they're more so, like, the serious characters who kind of try to steer things. There are some great jokes, like, when Paula says, like, I never really understood his music, but it really seems to make a lot of people money.
Yeah.
Really great delivery on that. But, I think it's interesting that, again, Yorma plays the serious foil to Andy Samberg's character. Whereas, like, in Hot Rod, it was, what was his name in Hot Rod? Not Rod, of course, but Yorma's character. Kevin?
Lawrence.
I think it was Kevin.
Oh.
Anyways, well, he played, like, the serious, like, backup to Rod, the more realist, who was, you know, more down to earth. And then in this movie, he still does that with Connor, where Owen is, like, more down to earth and realistic.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe, okay, so maybe stupidity isn't the right word. I think it's the narcissism.
Yeah.
Like, every, like, star, at the very least, is definitely portrayed as, like, some amount of narcissistic. Even the, like, you know, the people that they got there, to some extent. The actual people, like, portraying themselves, in a sense. And, like, it, you know, it's a simple tale of, you know, a narcissist sort of learning to put aside his own pride to, you know, fess up to his mistakes and then being able to get the band back together for that. But, I mean, I think as a story, it you know, plays out well.
Yeah. Sometimes it kind of feels like celebrities being in on the joke that they're narcissistic. But I guess that's kind of hard to avoid if you want to make a story about narcissistic people and you're in a movie, you know? Like, I mean, I'm sure some of them are very nice people who aren't completely narcissistic, but there's sort of a tongue-in-cheek wink to the camera. Like, this is what celebrities are like, wink.
Yeah, I think there's an interesting, an interesting parallel. Or not parallel, but an interesting distinction between the celebrities who are sort of an affectionate parody and the, like, CMZ, which are the TMZ parody, which has Eric Andre, should be noted.
Right.
Where, like, you know, when they do the TMZ parody and, like, it's a good parody, but, like, it is extremely, like, harsh on TMZ people. As you know, just sort of like this parasitic, like, you know, gross, you know, obsession and need to devalue everyone and everything that they obsess about. And, like, I don't think that is invalid parody, but I do find it interesting that, like, the affectionate parody is the rich people.
Right. It is, I do love, though, the scene where, like, they're all drinking out of these huge cups at the TMZ, and then Will Arnett comes back up from his cubicle and has three cups duct taped together, and he has, like, all the straws in his mouth. The scenes are very good. I do want to clarify that.
Yes. Like, again, this is, by and large, a funny movie. I just think that, like, it is a 2016 movie that is you can definitely tell it was made, like, definitely in 2016. It is sort of a pre-Trump comedy.
Yeah, a pre-retrospective. Also, they did make DJ Khaled say the meme.
Yes.
That's important to note.
He did say you played yourself.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's one other thing about this movie that I feel like is hard for me to ignore, but I have to ignore.
Oh?
So, here's the thing. I don't remember when it was we really had this conversation last time, but we do not know the real lives of the people involved in this movie.
Yes.
But it's hard to ignore that Andy Samberg plays the main character of a trio who falls out of touch with the trio because he gets more famous, and that Andy Samberg was the breakout star when he joined SNL, whereas Akiva and Yorma didn't get much scenes through. I don't think there's animosity between the trio in real life, but I wonder if there's animosity towards the industry in real life.
Yeah, like, that's a very good, like, way of putting it, is that, you know, we can't say anything definitive, but there might be... I think that, you know, they sort of... They definitely have written, in some respect, what they know, but, like, you know, they could easily sort of be drawing from that experience as sort of like, you know, hey, this is an industry that is cutthroat, in a sense. This is an industry that, you know, breaks people apart. And yes, it is the individuals doing it as well, but, like, this is an industry-wide problem.
Yeah. It's, like I said, I don't think they actually have animosity towards each other. I mean, they're still making movies together and all that. But I do think it's sort of an interesting coincidence, if at that. That being said, I do agree this movie is kind of aged weirdly. It's definitely a lot more high concept, I guess, than Hot Rod, in a way that I think is, like, very period piece. Not just in terms of the language used or the jokes made, but just, like I said, I brought up all those references that you had forgotten about. Those are parts of the movie that aid in its, like, its satire that could easily be forgotten because they were just part of a news cycle.
Oh, man. Remember Apple?
Yeah.
Remember when they existed?
Remember when everybody hated Justin Bieber?
In retrospect, I feel like Matt, you know, really should have walked back that Justin Bieber, you know, mentioned. I mean, you know, he did eventually become president of the world, and he did find out and, you know, imprison Matt. And I think that I think that he should have taken more care to think about Justin Bieber's feelings. All hail Justin Bieber.
What is this, Rocco's Basilisk? Don't look that up. That's a cognito hazard. sorry about that. I don't have a whole lot else to say other than I think it's really interesting that, like, the movie does not cover the entirety of the songs that they made for the movie. Like, in the Mona Lisa song, it doesn't even mention the pyramids in the movie, but if you listen to the soundtrack, it does. And that's why I said it's like a concept album tie-in, that to get the whole pop star experience, you have to listen to the album separately.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the album, like, a lot of the songs themselves are just actually still really good.
They're Lonely Island songs.
Yeah.
Like,
Equal Rights is probably definitely one of my favorites. I still feel like it could easily have, like, meme relevance. I remember there was... The first time I heard that song, I remember it was because Police Brutality was in the news cycle for reasons that we all know. And, like, some TikTok star had made a TikTok / song that was basically like, you know, I'm not black, but, you know, man, I feel for the black people who are going through a lot right now. And kind of got memed on, and one of the memes that was memed on them was the, I'm not gay, but if I was, I would want equal rights.
Yeah.
It's not fair. I'm not gay.
Yeah. I like I said, I like Mona Lisa. I think Turn Up the Beef is funnier when you have the rest of the song bookending the catchphrase verse, because, like, it makes it really show how much it stands out. it's a decent album.
Yeah.
It also has the standalone version of Incredible Thoughts, which is good.
Yeah.
That's probably my favorite song on the album.
Yeah. With that, do we have a whole lot else? Because I've got a pizza waiting for me.
And I've got a basilisk to program. So, yeah, I don't have much else other than thank you for listening. You can follow me on, or you can follow us on Twitter at NetServerPro. I would say follow us on Facebook, but I have not been able to make posts on Facebook because Facebook sucks.
Yay!
So that's cool. But you can get updates on our upcoming episodes, get little teasers for them. You know, we have one more episode of Lonely Jalogist coming up, so keep an eye out for that. You may know what it is, but you may not. We might have said it already. I'm not sure.
You can also, it's sure to be a home run.
You can also follow us on any podcasting platform you like. Give us a rating, give us a comment, give us a review. Let us know how we're doing. Send us any recommendations for episodes or just media in general. You can follow me on Twitter at Matt Craig Gaming. I tweet what I'm doing, what I'm thinking about, what I'm working on. I've been tweeting a bit about The World Ends With You, of course, because very good video games. I also tweet out when I go live on my stream, which is at twitch.tv/twack, twitch.tv/twak. I stream Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday from about 1 p.m. Central Time to 3 or 4 p.m. Central Time. I stream a lot of roguelites, platformers, fighting games, competitive games, strategy games, what have you. Also, important announcement, until the end of August, I am going to be fundraising for the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation, the JDRF, through their JDRF Games to Give fundraising event. And currently, you can find links to that on my Twitter and also my Twitch page. But on August 13th and August 20th, I'm specifically doing some special streams to coincide with that. So keep an eye out on my stream and my Twitter for those special streams. Be some interactive stuff to raise money for a cause that's very near and dear to me.
Hell yeah. Support a good cause, get some good content. Sounds like a fun time. You can, if you would like to help fight against the creation of a basilisk, you can find me on both Twitter and TikTok on the same handle. It's at Galen Wilson. That's at GalenWilson0N. I post my hot takes and sometimes videos of my cat. You can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/machinegunvampire. I recently got a bunch of Game Boy ROMs for obscure Game Boy games. Did you know that they made a fucking... Did you know that they put fucking Guilty Gear X on the Game Boy Advance?
Oh yeah, for no reason.
And if you want to find me on YouTube, I'm the only Galen on YouTube. Just put that in the search bar and I'll probably be one of the top results, if not the top. But with that, this has been NetSurfer Pro.
See ya.
And that was the last episode.
Bye forever. Wait, I can't say that. That's somebody else's podcast end note.